we're going to talk about values. And we're going to talk about the values that we have at Zion. And what are values? Values are principles that influence our decision making. Okay? And why are we going to talk about these? Because at the end of the next couple of weeks, we are going to show you the next five-year plan. What I believe God has called us to be about over the course of the next 5 years. And before we do that, I want you to see what influences who we are and how it is that we have come to be in this place with God and this place where he has called us to be. And I want also for you to know these values. I want you to use these values. These values represent who we are in Christ together. And I think that it's important for the sake of the continuity of our ministry, that it should go on to the next generation, that it should go on to the next group of people, for us to have these out and available and be able to share them. I also believe, and this is especially for those of you who from time to time say, why are you talking about church again? And I'll tell you why. Because you, by virtue of being here, are called to be a disciple of Jesus. And no disciple is alone in being discipled. You, because of Jesus, are placed within the context of a community. And that community we call the body of Christ or the church. So you cannot just be all on your own. I am a church of one. I am my own church. Doesn't work that way. We are all in this together. And that's God's plan. Did you ever think about how brilliant that was? If you look at how we do education, I think it'd be fantastic to bring in a tutor and to tutor this one child with this one tutor. Think about how much that child would learn free from the distractions of all the other children. Amen? Wouldn't that be great? That'd be fantastic. Instead of having the class of 30, you have the class of one. One-on-one time. Woo, that's great. But then here's the problem, right? How does that child ever learn to function within a greater society? How does a child ever learn to deal with difficult people? How does a child ever learn to live with, oops, controversial, it's political, sorry, but with bullies? How does a child ever learn about their identity and who they are as a part of a group, but also as different than other people? What John was talking about this morning, it's all about your identity. Who are you? Are you what you wear? Are you what you drive? Are you where you live? Are you what you live in? Are you what you do for a living? Or is your identity found in being a child of God through Jesus Christ? It makes all the difference in the world. And you see, if your identity is found in being a child of God through Jesus Christ, then you're part of something bigger than you are. You're part of a family. And you have to learn how to live within that family. One of the things about Zion is that we're very messy. We run into each other all the time. And we got language stuff going on. We got culture stuff going on. We got that was your way and this is my way stuff going on. We got my church used to do it this way and our church has always done it that way stuff. We've got Baptists, Methodists, Presbyterians, Pentecostals, Lutherans, who else we got? I don't know. They're all here. And everybody bumping into each other all the time. And do you know what that makes for? It makes for a lot of messes. But here's the deal. It makes for an endless opportunity for learning. Because it's only in the struggle that you find that growth. I don't know. It sounds really 60s, doesn't it? I'd be suspect of this one. But you go and prove me wrong. Because I'm going to tell you, as far as your faith is concerned, if you're not rubbing up against something, if you're not being challenged, you're not growing. Willow Creek, great big church, kind of at the forefront of the church growth movement that for most of my ministry, I've been an advocate and really a big fan of. Studied it. Spent all kinds of money going to all kinds of conferences. I've kind of changed my mind. But I respect Willow Creek because they looked out one day and they said, are we making church members or are we making disciples? And they spent millions of dollars on a study, and they studied 10,000 churches, and they studied themselves. And they hired the best people because it's Willow Creek. And what they came back with was one of the reasons why people leave church is because they're not challenged. I thought that was remarkable. That was really funny, actually. And so here's the thing. According to that principle, we ought to be the biggest church in town. Because we are perpetually challenged. As a matter of fact, we get so challenged sometimes that the pews push back, right, against the pulpit because it's like, well, I'm tired of being challenged. It's exhausting to go there. He's always spurring us on to some further thing. Yeah, why? Because if you don't, you don't grow. And if you don't grow, what's the point of your life? And it has to do with, all kinds of different facets. I mean, is faith a part of your life? Like a stereo system? You remember great stereo systems, right? Before they're all integrated into one unit or whatever. And there's different components. And you got your 8-track, and you got your cassette, and you got the reel-to-reel, and you got the phonograph, and you got the receiver, and you got the CD player, right? And remember when the changers came out, and they were in boxes, and you shoved the box into the mouth of the thing, and it could shuffle, and in between time there was this kind of like, and then we'll go on to the next song, and it's beautiful stuff. Is that what faith is? Is it just a component part? And you see, if your faith fuse were to burn out, your life would go on happily until its end, because look, you still got, your 8-track and your CDs and your whatever, and that just one component doesn't work, it's okay. Didn't need that anyway. Or is faith everything? Is it the foundation on which your life is built? Is faith your faith in Jesus? The thing that determines everything else about what you do and how you do it? Who you are and how you live that out? And I'll just put it to you, I think that's the way that it's supposed to be. I want you to, excuse me, look with me, Matthew chapter 7. It's the end of the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus has these words to say. And, I think Jesus is really important, don't you? And it is verse 24. And he says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and they beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. What are we supposed to do? We are to hear these words of mine. And what's the next part? Thank you. Put them into practice. Everybody's scared. What if I get it wrong? Going to hell, right? Okay, it's like a game show. Okay, put these words of mine, hear these words of mine, and put them into practice. What the world doesn't need is more people who know all kinds of things about the Bible, about Jesus and about God, and who don't live it out. Tell this to the kids, like on Wednesday nights, I love you, brother, I love you. Put your arm around them, and you say, here's the deal. God has a great plan for your life. He has made you with a purpose in mind. And let me tell you, I know for certain that God did not make you to be a gangster. Because there's enough gangsters in the world already. Our quota been done filled. We don't need any more. What God needs from you is to be righteous. God needs people who will follow him, who will do great things, whether small things or big things, in his name. People who will bring goodness and light into the world. We've got enough of the other kind. And we got enough people who are making judgments. We got enough people who are speaking, condemnation on people. What we need in this world is more Jesus. And the way to do that is to send out the little Christ-like ones trying to be his disciples. And you say, oh, but wait, you know, I'm not that good. I'm not that good, and look at my job. I get to run a church. Moses wasn't that good. Remember what he was? Among other things, he was a murderer. Abraham wasn't that good. Do you remember Abraham? Among other things, he was pretty deceitful and just an outright liar because he kept pawning his wife off as his sister. Do you remember that? Not once, but twice. There was a guy named David. You remember him? He was an adulterer. Kids, do you know what that means? Ask your parents when you get home. There was Peter, who didn't want to follow. He was a rough-speaking, hard-living fisherman by all accounts. And yet he became one of the greatest of the apostles. Do you remember Paul? He murdered Christians. And yet, he was the apostle to the Gentiles. You see, God does wondrous things with broken people like us because we're transformed through the cross, through the blood of Christ. That's part of the discipleship journey. It's the realization that we're nothing without him, that there isn't anything that has meaning or purpose apart from him, but that in him, all kinds of things can have meaning and purpose, even when they look like it's the darkest kind of the night. Has everything to do with Jesus. I wanted to read you this too from today. It's in your bulletin, Hebrews 12, 1-3. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. It's talking about life, the life of faith, the life of a follower of Jesus as a race. That is daunting for me. I am not the best physically fit specimen. It's hard, though. And it isn't about what kind of shape you're in or whatever. It's about, will you persevere? Because it's tough. But you're never going to make it if you don't keep trying. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer. What does that mean? What means he went first? It means we follow him. He blazed the trail. Jesus, our trail blazer and the perfecter of our faith. How do you get faith perfected? Have you ever seen one of those rock polishing machines? Did you ever have one when you were a kid? You know, you get your box of rocks. And you dump them in there, and you pour the solution in there, and then you crank it, and you go round and round. And all those rocks going around and around and falling on each other and bashing into each other and hitting each other and all the rest of the stuff. I don't imagine it's very comfortable for the rocks. But they come out shiny, looking like little gemstones. It's the life of faith. I guess you could say no pain, no gain. Perfection comes at a cost. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. I don't want you to grow weary, and I don't want you to lose heart, because here's the thing. It's all about Jesus. Everything that we do, everything about your life, it's about him. Would you let it be? Stop trying to become something so that the world will acknowledge you as being this or that or high and mighty and all the rest of the stuff, because none of that matters at the end of the day. What matters is eternity. What matters isn't what other people think about you. What matters is what who thinks of you? Oh yeah. Say it with me. Jesus. See, this is the thing. Our first value is simply this, right? It's all about Jesus. And I remember that when we first said this, and this was many years ago, this was about, I'd say it was 11 years ago. And I remember that a family came to see me and they said, we don't believe that it is all about Jesus. And we think you're wrong and we're leaving. Because what we're saying is this, the Bible, it's all about Jesus. You want to know how to read the Bible? Well, you know, open it up, start reading, and then ask yourself the question, what does that say about Jesus? And then people are like, oh, but it's the Old Testament. Jesus hasn't been yet. No. The Old Testament is setting the stage. The Old Testament is prophetic stuff. What's it prophesying about? About Jesus. A lot of times people get, you know, hung up in the history of things and all the rest of this stuff. And they say, why all this killing? Why all this slaughtering idol worshipers and all the knocking down of the high places and things like that? I say, what does that say about Jesus? It says, number one, he's jealous for you. He wants to be the object of your worship, not other things. And what else? Well, because of Jesus, you can come to God in faith and be saved. You don't have to be slaughtered. And people will say, well, is that good news? And it's like, well, you know, I mean, you could be slaughtered or you could be saved. What do you want to be? I mean, you know, this is the whole thing. The difficulty is, right, that people whose life isn't all about Jesus have a hard time putting this into context because there's so much that life could be about. It could be about politics or ideology. It could be about your hobbies. It could be about careers. It could be about the triumph of ideas. Everything in our life is competing for us and for our attentions. But there's only one audience that endures, that audience of one, this Jesus. And only one is going to go with you through thick and thin to the gates of hell and back, never leaving you or forsaking you, to be with you through everything until the end of everything. And that's Jesus. So everything we need to do here needs to be about Jesus. Who is our boss? Who's our customer? It's two different ways of looking at it, right? So what we do, we do for. Okay, that's good because it's the only answer so far, I think, that I've asked you. So it's a pretty safe bet. I'll try not to change it. Okay? He's also the one that we obey, right? So what we do because he says, and what we do, we try to do well because we're doing it for. That's right. So Jesus says to us, you know, I want you to hear these words of mine. I want you to put them into practice. How do you do that? And look, you know, I mean, I've struggled with this my whole life, and the answer is right in front of us. I want you to hear these words of mine, and I want you to put them into practice. How do you put them into practice? Let's try living a parable. So God sends us a parable, Luke 14, the parable of the great banquet, right? You're familiar with the story, a lot of you. I won't retell the whole thing. But essentially it's this. Jesus says, when you give a banquet, don't invite your rich friends or your neighbors. Instead, invite the poor, the lame, the blind, and those who can't pay you back. Right? So we're given a vision of an apartment complex and we go and we bring lunch, and that introduces us to a whole group of people who at the time happened to be refugees. Today, right? Just had our big debut on CBN. Look on our works, ye mighty in despair. Got a little write-up in Christianity Today online, right? What's this church all about as far as the rest of the world is concerned? Refugees, right? Sometimes people in the church forget about that too, and is it, what were you all about? Refugees, you don't care about the refugees, you don't care about me, or whatever. And it's like, really? Is that what we're about? And I'm just going to put it to you, and I'm going to challenge you on that. Here's the deal. The church is all about Jesus. Because Jesus is the one who sets the course of action. Go bless people who can't bless you back. It could have been anybody. We could be a church filled with bikers. Cool. We could have been a church filled with lonely people. We could have been a church filled with elderly people, disabled people. What did we get? A whole bunch of kids and people who used to be refugees. That's not why we do what we do. We do what we do because of Jesus. I need you to keep this in mind. Publicity is great, but it doesn't understand. Other pastors, they'll say, we love what it is that you're doing, but we don't have your people. By which they mean people used to be refugees. And of course, you know, the irony is that driving by their churches in the shadows of those mighty spires are complexes filled with people from different places that nobody sees. It's ironic, isn't it? Well, that's you. That's your neighborhood. That's your thing. No, that's not how it started. It started because we just wanted it to be about Jesus and we walked down the street. That's it. No matter who walks through that door, I don't care what color they are. I don't care what language they speak. I don't care where they originated. I don't care whether they were imported or whether they were built here. We'll treat them in the way that we need to treat our master. But in the end, it isn't about them. In the end, it's not about you. In the end, it's not about me, and it's not about us. It's about Jesus. And if it isn't, we need to roll it up and we need to quit because we're going down the wrong path. It's all about Jesus. It can't be about the people that we serve. Because, you know, what do we want from the people that we serve? Oh, well, we'd like to be thanked. Well, sometimes they don't, amen? It's just the way it is. So there's this thing called sin. And sometimes when we want to be thanked, we cross into sin too, because then we've made it not about them, it's about us, and it certainly isn't about Jesus. Do you see what I'm saying? There's a terrible thing when you bring humanness into it. It can't be about us. It can't be about how we feel about what we're doing. Oh, I love to go to Zion. I love to help because it makes me feel so good about myself. Well, great is your reward. You know, you've received your reward. Praise the Lord. That's great. But here's the thing. What you're doing for who? You're doing for yourself. You're not doing for Jesus. Does that make sense? Do you get that? I know that this is hard stuff. I absolutely admit it's hard stuff. And sometimes I think people say, well, that's like a razor's edge, that you're asking us to balance on a razor's edge. Yes, because Jesus is up there on the razor's edge too. I think to follow Jesus is also to be misunderstood because people will think that you aren't who you are. Remember John was talking about, well, I'm a nurse. Yeah, but that's what you do. That's not who you are. But people look at you and they say, well, as a nurse, so you make between this and this. You live in this kind of a place. You drive this kind of a car. You do this kind of a thing. We categorize people because we're human. We put them into little boxes. People look at this church. Well, you're all about refugees. Okay. Or you're all about kids. Or you're all about this. Or you're all about that. No, we're all about Jesus. Because he's the one who's called us into all of it. Right now, there's this big thing going on, right? And everybody's mad at everybody, and it all has to do about presidential orders and refugees and pausing a program and all this kind of stuff. I gotta tell you something. Last night at a restaurant, a woman came up and, you know, she was distraught. She said, you must be beside yourself. And I said, well, here's the deal. It doesn't really matter We're called to love people who are right here in front of us, regardless. If you turn off the flow, we might be able to get caught up a little bit. If you don't like that, I understand. But this is high and mighty stuff. All we can really do, and what we're good at, is ministering to the people who are right in front of us. And we've got so many, I can't even begin to tell you. And I'm not just talking about refugees. There's all kinds of homeless people who were born here. All kinds of people in all kinds of need and all kinds of help all the time. You're never going to run out of ministry opportunities. Can I tell you something? Do you know what the reward for helping people who need help is? More people who need help. Do you know why? Because there's this biblical principle. You find it in the Bible. When something good happens to you and you get blessed, do you know what you do? You run and you tell your friends and your family, and then what? They all come too. Isn't that great? And it's this, like, this multiplication thing that keeps on happening and all the rest of this stuff. Yeah, I think it's great. I know. It can be a little overwhelming. But you see, that's why it also has to be all about Jesus. Because you know something? When Pastor John tries to do something, did you know that there's a better than average chance that he will fail? When Zion Church tries to do something, we don't do it perfectly. Now, how about you? Do you? But you see, there's this magnificent thing that happens. There's this radical grace from God. It says that, you know, he's going to forgive. Who says that you're not going to have perfection in this life? Who says the most important thing is that you stepped out in faith and that you tried? Because the results are all in his hands. Did you know that sometimes God causes us or calls us to fail? I want you to think about that. At least people would look at it that way. How do I know this? I want you to think about Jesus on Good Friday. And he's on the cross. And about noon, they poke him. And they declare him dead. And they take him down. And they wrap his body and they put it in the tomb. And everybody in the world, all his enemies, all the crowds of people, they all said, "Shucky darns. I guess he wasn't the one after all." Sometimes it's like that for you in your walk of faith because you're being obedient. And God got you dead and he got you in the tomb. And the world will say, "Look, you're done." No, there's Easter. And the best is yet to come. He rises. And sometimes he calls us to be dead for a little while so that we can rise too. That's just how it is. As it is in life, so it is in our ministry. Because you aren't defined by how you do in God's eyes. You're defined by who it is that you do it for. And you've got to keep that straight. Appearances can be really deceiving. I ever tell you at the time my most embarrassing moment? 1984, Tel Aviv, Israel. It was big. Got off the plane, went to the restroom, followed this enormous line of men waiting to go. Got up to the sinks, turned them on, a little bit tired from the jetting around, and wound up with a sink full of water down my front side. Looked like I'd had an accident. I had to walk through the whole airport like that. I was praying for like a messenger bag, praying for a backpack, a sweater, a coat, a jacket, heck, even a newspaper, anything. Could I just have to go out and wait for the bus, have to stand under the big bright lights, no darkness to hide in, no rock to crawl under, and everybody in Israel thought I'd wet my pants. It's hard to be misunderstood. It's hard to be embarrassed. Jesus says, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, be of good cheer, because I have overcome the world. You see, that's why it has to be all about Jesus. It can't be about us. We have to follow him through no matter what it looks like. We just need to make sure that it's all about him. What we do at Zion isn't about social justice. Social justice is about equality, and it involves power. You get power so that you can correct inequality by taking from some and giving to others and trying to restore some sense of equality. But I ask you this, here's the problem. For us, we understand that God is not fair. And do you know how we know this? Because God loved the world so much that he gave his one and only son, who took on flesh and blood like us and died on a cross the death that we were to die. It's not fair. He treated us better than we deserve. He saves us when what we deserve is hellfire and damnation. And you see, if that breaks through to you and you understand that, then the world becomes about Jesus. Why? Because you've been saved. And now what do you want? More than anything else, you want every broken person like you in the world to be saved. You want entire societies to be saved. You want to forgive as you've been forgiven. You want to be merciful because you've been shown great mercy. You want your life to reflect the glory of God because you've seen it. What we do here is radical grace. Blessing people who can't bless us back, because that's what Jesus calls us to do. Showing each other enormous grace and being quick to forgive, slow to anger. Because that's what it takes to live in community. And because Jesus is the one who created the church, and he wants us to be in this experience of going through life together. Because when we rub up against each other, it's like iron sharpening iron. We get smarter. We grow in maturity, not just individually, but together. It's risky. It's hard. It's messy. It's potentially explosive. But it's God. And it's all about Jesus. Thanks for listening.